Welcome to the 12th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free number anyone may call for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody followed by the number 8. If you're homeless, formerly homeless, or afraid you're about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. Coming up, a double testimony hour. We'll have the testimonies of Gulf Coast Katrina survivors at one mic. And at a second mic, we'll also have special testimonies from Reverend Alex Liddell, Executive Director of Hope Ministries in rural Washington Parish, Louisiana, from Bryce Phillips, founder of WQRZ Radio in Waveland, Mississippi, and nationally recognized hero of Katrina, and from Mike Rhodes, editor of the Community Alliance newspaper in Fresno, California, right after this. For the city. His father works some days for 14 hours, and you can bet he barely makes a dollar. His mother goes to scrub the floors for many, and you best believe she hardly gets a penny. Living just enough, just enough for the city.
We're sitting on the freezing steps of the Howell Courthouse, holding styrofoam cups of hot chocolate and sipping them in the rain. It's cold out, and it's dark, and the rain is starting to seep through our clothes. I'm sitting with high school senior Brittany Nall. She's here for tonight's event. It's an event to raise awareness about homelessness. I turn to Nall, and I ask her to tell me about her family.
I was in foster care for a while, then I got adopted, and I ran away about a year ago, so I didn't have a very good family. I've been abused pretty much my whole life, so I ran away.
Nall got hooked up with a host family through the Connection Youth Services. The Connection is a nonprofit United Way agency. It's funded by state and federal grants. The Connection helps kids aged 12 to 21, and provides them with counseling, support groups, and crisis intervention. The Connection also helps kids out with housing, kids like Nall, who don't have any. Nall loves to draw and sing and write her own songs. Right now, she's on the hunt for a job. Otherwise, she keeps up on homework and housework.
I wouldn't really consider myself homeless just because I do have a place to stay. I do have friends. But in a way, I am homeless because I have moved around so much since I've run away that it's kind of hard to find one place to really call home.
In fact, many kids do not consider themselves homeless if they're sleeping on their friends' couches or in their cars. Plus, kids can often feel shamed or embarrassed to be homeless, so they're not telling their counselors or other adults that they are homeless. And all these things can make it challenging to find and help homeless youth. Nall says her situation is tough and painful. She turns to her artwork and her music as what she calls healthy ways to relieve the pain.
For me right now, it's hard not having a mom and a dad. You know, you see all of these kids that, you know, can ask their parents for things or have their parents be there when something goes wrong, and I've never had that. So basically, it's me taking care of myself. I can't run to anybody, really. I mean, that's not like I don't have anybody, but, you know, it's very, very hard not to have parents.
Nall heard about the Connection after she ran away from her foster home. The program manager at the Connection actually says that most of the kids who come there hear about it through word of mouth. And that's how Nall heard about the Connection.
Oh, they have helped me out a lot. I don't think I'd be getting half the things that I have now if I didn't go through the Connection. I wouldn't have a place to stay. I'd be moving constantly. I wouldn't be having the services that I need. My caseworker helps out with a lot of stuff, like financial things and helping me figure out Medicare and basically putting me out in the real world and teaching me how to be an adult.
When I ask her about her future, Nall has an answer right away.
I will be going to college. I'm going to be an illustrator for like signs and books or whatever that they need, because I'm an artist and I want to get married, have my own family, and be a really good mom. That's what I want my life to be like in the future.
Nall says the harder she works, the stronger it makes her. But since this interview, Nall has left her host home, and the people at the Connection say they don't know how to get a hold of her. I'm Kyle Norris, Michigan Radio News.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Homelessness Marathon, where the numbers to call in are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. We have another double testimony hour this hour where we're going to be hearing from all sorts of people, including from you, if you call in. But first, I want to talk to a bona fide American hero. I want to talk with Bryce Phillips of WQRZ. Bryce, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you very much for having me, and happy Mardi Gras, everybody. It's great to be homeless.
Well, now, are you homeless, Bryce?
Well, not exactly. Right now, I'm still in FEMA care in a FEMA paid-for motel at the present time, and thought I was going to be homeless pretty quick, but apparently I got official word in writing just like 2 days ago that I'm allowed till April 30th to be in a motel. So
I'm a little unclear about this myself. I mean, people were, if you're just tuning in and you're just joining us, let me explain that March 1st was the deadline for everybody down here to lose their temporary housing. The Obama administration has extended the deadline for people in FEMA housing, but there are also people in Mississippi Emergency Management Agency housing, temporary housing. They have not received an extension, although some of the local municipalities have allowed a little more time. But the bottom line is, even if you have an extra couple of months, you're still under the gun.
That's correct.
And Bryce, because you're a famous hero, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I don't mean to embarrass you. You may have a better prospect than most of us, but nonetheless, you still have to figure out what to do.
That's correct. I was still, you know, I was in the queue for Mima Cottage, the alternative housing program.
Right.
And they shut that program down before I ever got through. I'm probably one of the last people in line. I was very fortunate to get my homeowner's grant from Phase 2 grant from the state of Mississippi, Mississippi Development Authority, and that just received that probably about a month and a half ago. And with, of course, contingency that I cannot rebuild on my own property until I have elevation. And so I'm still waiting on the elevation grant. So therefore, I have a lot of money to rebuild my home, but no elevation grant to even start.
Oh, well, there you go. That's a big help. We are in Pass Christian, Mississippi, right near the Ground Zero where Hurricane Katrina came ashore. And really all night we've been talking about the red tape, the falling through the cracks, the
yep.
difficulty of getting help, the difficulty of qualifying for help. But let's go back and talk about the storm itself. And for people who don't know, Bryce is the only broadcaster who kept his station on the air between New Orleans and Pascagoula. That's about 150 miles of the Gulf Coast. And you did that nearly at the cost of your life. So maybe you could tell people that story because, you know, it's an important story for people to know, not just because it's interesting how you kept yourself on the air, your station on the air, mm-hmm. but I want to point out that Bryce is a small broadcaster. Bryce
That's
is
correct.
A... not the big money broadcaster, and the big money broadcasters all closed up and left town. So, Bryce, tell people the story of what you did.
I certainly did, and way back in 2000, we applied, you know, I'm a ham radio operator, and we have a small group of concerned amateur radio operators that got together in Hancock County and created an organization to try to help serve the local elected officials and, of course, the Emergency Operations Center here to make sure that there were some kind of communications during when a disaster struck. Well, it came upon when Low Power Radio Act came up that we applied for a low power FM radio station. We applied with the big window in 2000, and then because they started restricting the rules. Because
window for people who don't know, means application.
An application window, yes.
At the FCC.
At the FCC to even apply for this type of facility. Well, there was restrictions to that, and they didn't allow a lot of folks to get through the system because of interference to another big broadcaster. We were considered little people, and the rules are, well, if we're just secondary class broadcasters, but they did allow us on the band. Well, only 255 of these applications of 3,800 back then only made it to the window because they fit the engineering guidelines not to interfere. So I was one of those stations that got a construction permit. We built the station specifically for disaster preparedness and tied amateur radio to it to where we can talk to public service through dispatch or turn around and talk to the public through the broadcast or also operate amateur radio all in the same building. It's just a pioneering concept. Nobody's ever done.
Okay.
And amateurs, of course, don't broadcast. Broadcasters aren't amateurs, and none of the two can you know, fit in with E911 or emergency broadcast, you know.
Nonetheless, you fit more, I mean, in terms of the kind of station, more as a community radio station, even if you're not officially defined as that.
That's correct. We were a 100-watt low-power FM station. So we completed construction, got on the air in 2003. I've only been on the air, but I guess it was from January 2003 we were officially on the air. And then we built it to solar-powered, okay, and I bought all the equipment. Built it all myself. I'm on Social Security. So it took a long time to
say. You're on disability.
Yes. Yes. I'm on disability. And I wanted to do something for my community because I just can't sit around and collect a check. And I had to fill my time and do something. So I felt this was a need to serve my community and, you know, and help not only myself but everybody else around me through a way that nobody else had done yet on this side of the Mississippi coast. So then Katrina comes along. And we were solar-powered at that time, and we moved all the radio equipment down to the EOC when all the rest of the...
Tell people what the EOC is.
Okay, that's Emergency Operations Center here in the... Well, I was in Hancock County.
Right.
For, like, civil defense, okay?
Right, and that is exactly where Katrina came ashore.
Yes, it is. We were in the eastern eye wall, and we were down close to the water, probably a quarter mile from the Bay Bridge. And, of course... It washed everything away. The water came to 33 foot above sea level, came to our feet when I was standing there. We had to put numbers on our hands because we didn't know when the water was going to stop during that storm. And it was.
Well, let me just break in and tell people what that means.
Okay.
They were in this emergency operations center, and at that point, it wasn't clear they were going to make it through the night. You couldn't exactly just get in your motorcycle and drive off.
No.
You were there, period.
We were there.
And if the water kept rising, you were going to drown, basically.
That's correct.
So they made up a list, and everybody put a number on their hand so that if your bodies were found, everybody, at least they'd know
who
you
were. Could be identified, yes.
Yes.
Pretty scary thought if you want to think about that. You just don't know when, you know, whether it's life or death. And that's the point about surviving any kind of disaster whenever it comes. So after that point, we of course, 2 days before the Hurricane Katrina came, I'd actually physically moved the transmitter and took one of the antennas off of the big stick from my house, which is at 4 foot above sea level, and moved it to 33 foot above, okay, to make sure we prepared to get folks out. And then the storm hit, and I knew my house was already destroyed and didn't know what else, but we had brought the broadcast transmitter and everything else down there. Well, good thing that we were solar-powered in the beginning and bought our equipment just specifically designed to make sure that we would be able to survive any kind of natural disaster. Of course, amateur radio operators know how to operate on a pinch or when it, you know, without any resources. So I guess I was very fortunate that the whole process worked out. And thank God, so a lot of lives were saved, including my own.
Well, yes, we're all glad for that. But again, I want to be, but we've talked a lot about on this program so far about, you know, what the profit motive does, what concentrating always on wealth does to a society, what it does.
Yes.
And the fact is, you're somebody who was not motivated by profit.
No.
And you had only a minuscule fraction of the resources of the people who were.
That's correct. Well, you know, that's my hobby. I enjoy what I do. And I'm very fortunate to even have, you know, had taken the time to plan well in advance for some kind of natural or man-made disaster and be able to prepare for it just for communications capabilities.
Well, you know, I just want to underscore this point. We have some mistaken notion in this country that if you're a professional, you're better than somebody who's an amateur. But the fact is, the professionals didn't do the job and the amateurs did.
Well, you can have all the money in the world, but if you're not dedicated to the purpose of what radio was designed for in the first place, to basically tell and give information in a real-time situation, well, then what's the purpose of even operating a station in the first place?
And by the way, the Homelessness Marathon is essentially a volunteer outfit where nobody gets paid. We do a little bit, minimally, compensate. In the last couple of years, we've had a little more money, and we can now afford to compensate some people for the money they're losing to do the broadcast.
Right.
But nobody makes money on this broadcast. Well, listen, we got a caller, and we got somebody at the mic, and so that's take the call. The numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And we have Robert from Alameda, California on the phone. Are you there, Robert? Well, I think we don't have Robert.
Go ahead. Hi, I want to thank you so much.
Oh, there you are.
I want to thank you so much for such a great program
that
you have tonight. I'm really learning a lot. And I have to admit that actually I'm responding to something in the last hour where you were folks were asking people to call in and ask about you know what we've taken away from Katrina.
And my thanks to Brian Rutkowski, who is a host on
QRZ.
It's late. I can't even remember my own name, much less your call letters.
You do it just fine.
But I want to thank him for being such an excellent guest host. So
awesome. And I'm listening in KPFA Berkeley.
Great station.
Awesome. Yeah, they're wonderful. First Pacifica station. Anyway, so I have to admit that I really have not taken much away from Katrina because I'm out here in California. But I really do appreciate what I see visually in terms of documentation. So I guess I called in to encourage everybody who is close to that area to just keep documenting what you're doing, because whether I see it through you know, glimpses of PBS or whatever, it's really important, I guess, for people to you know, continue to be doing what they're doing in community, but then also documenting it so that communities outside of that can really be inspired and also to respond.
Well, Robert, you know, first let me give out the numbers. 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT are our numbers. You know, Robert, you're in an earthquake zone. So quite literally what has happened here, not maybe a hurricane, but a disaster, mm-hmm. could certainly strike where you're living. There's no question about that. And if you've been listening to this show for a while, I'm sure you know you'd like better help than these people got after any kind of a disaster like that.
Well, surely. And actually, this is the first time I've heard you guys. And apparently, this is a marathon. So
that's right.
I don't know much about this show, but, you know, definitely, you know, I'm glad that we're, like, you know, passing information around. You know, it's interesting how crisis really does bring communities together. Wakes everybody up, you know, and it would be nice if ideally that communities would be strong even when there wasn't, like, you know, shocking crisis.
Good point. And I think we had an expert on from who had been going back and forth to Cuba learning from them, and she was saying that it's all based around the neighborhoods there and everybody knows each other. Robert, you've been homeless yourself, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's right. There have been times when I've had to, like, you know, sleep in my car and whatnot, and I had to rely on, you know, friends of mine to help me and family to help me, basically. And you know, thankfully it was temporary. It was like sometimes, you know, I fall out of housing, whether it was like you know, an eviction or whatever. But you know, I know that it's always good to you know, have really you know, strong, like, friends and family support. You know, that's
no, we all need community, but, you know, some people don't have family. Some people are orphans. Some people are whatever they are. And I think there is a role for government, and that's one of the things that's been really missing down here, and it's a shame. Robert, I'm going to thank you very much for the call. We have someone at the mic, and I hope you'll keep listening, and I thank you for participating.
Thank you, Robert.
I think you folks are awesome, and, you know, keep on keeping on, and thank you so much. And I definitely have always been a liberal, and I've never been a conservative. And I definitely think that the have-nots need some support from the government. So you know, definitely we should advocate for that. And thank you for your show.
Thank you. And anybody who's been listening out there for a few hours will know that around this part of the woods, here where Katrina hit, the liberals and the conservatives don't sound all that much different, because even the lifelong conservatives are finding out, yeah, there actually is a role for government. Maybe the government could be doing a little more than what it's done. Those numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And at the microphone, we have Greg from Biloxi. From Biloxi. Greg.
Hey, Greg.
When I'm reading it, it looks like Biloxi, but anybody who's down here knows it's really Biloxi. So just like it's not past Christian, it's past Christian. And everything's a little different down here. Greg, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. And would you like to share a little bit of your story with us?
Well, my wife and I came down here after Katrina, and, you know, we was doing pretty good for a while until she lost her job. And we've been homeless roughly about 3 months. But what part of what was on my mind is why the state can't come up with a program to, like, a homeless person can get food stamps, no problem. But why can't they come up with a program like I think a lot of other states have it, I can't think of any in particular, where you can get paid by the state to work so many hours, you know what I'm saying? Get a check from the state and then just work it off like maybe...
Workfare kind of a thing.
Yeah, kind of like that, you know, work maybe on the highways, filling in potholes or picking up trash, cleaning up the beach...
A little community service. Huh?
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of workfare. I'm a big fan of jobs. So, you know, I don't know if you have to be working off your welfare check. Just why not just give everybody a job, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I always thought it's unfair to blame people for not having work if there's no work for people to have. And, you know, if we had a society today where every able-bodied man, you could give them a shovel, they could go dig a ditch and get paid or whatever, clean up trash like the Civilian Conservation Corps in the Depression. Now, some people, of course, can't do that kind of labor, but if anybody who could, you can't blame somebody for being lazy if the jobs ain't there. If you give them a job and they don't want to do it, okay, then I'm not talking about people who are disabled or something like that. But, I mean, if everybody, you know, has the chance, that's one thing, but if you don't have the chance... Well,
what do
you
do?
How can you blame them?
Yeah, what do you do?
What about, I don't know if you're familiar with the Back Bay Mission or not, they're doing a lot of building up there. How many homeless people was employed there?
I don't know the answer. I do know of the mission, but I don't know the answer to your question.
So I was kind of curious.
You might tilt that mic up a little towards your mouth there.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious because it seems to me if it's a place for the homeless and the needy, shouldn't they have to employ so many homeless people?
Well,
I think there needs to be programs to help the homeless that end up at the mission to be able to either rehabilitate them or try to help them, vocational rehabilitation, something, or job training program.
I agree. Well, you know, and it also doesn't have to be the same thing. The point is there has to be something.
There's got
to
be something.
I mean, maybe the people who are their clients are not the people with the skills to do what they need done. Maybe they are. I don't know.
It takes a lot of skill to pick up paper and carry lumber.
Well, I don't have an opinion on what their actual situation is. I just don't know it.
Right.
But the point is, there has to be help. If they can't employ you, somebody else should. And, you know, maybe they're serving a different population. But, yeah, there has to be help. If there's no help, what are you going to do? Everybody needs help. And I think Greg, are bringing up an important issue, though. You know,
what about the pursuit of happiness?
Well, that's another issue altogether. But I mean, you know... Mississippi was the poorest state in the Union before Katrina. And not all of the poverty that's down here has anything to do with Katrina. You weren't affected personally by Katrina, but you come into this area and you're in an environment where they're still rebuilding and there's still not enough jobs and there's still a lot of problems and it's hard to get on your feet.
Right.
And what have you done so people will know, what efforts have you made to get on your feet down here?
Well, you know, it's just like everyone else, you know. You check around and initially it started... We kind of got into it at a bad time anyhow because it was right around the holidays when we became homeless. And it was like, well, after the holidays. And then after the holidays was over, it's like, well, okay, come back after the first of the year. You go back after the first of the year. And now they're saying, check back next month. You know what I'm saying? It's always come back, you know. And it's never no anything.
And where do you sleep at night?
We camp out.
So you're outdoors.
Right.
You don't have a camper. You mean you're just literally under the stars? Do you have a tent? What
we
do you have
a tent.
You have a tent.
Yeah.
And is your tent in a legal place or is it hidden someplace?
We haven't been bothered by the police or anything.
Okay.
So, I mean, nobody's bothered us.
Well, you're lucky there because that does happen.
Yeah.
That does happen.
Yeah.
And are there other homeless people around where you are?
Close. Not real close, but in the area.
And... have you talked to the other homeless people around there? I mean, are they all saying things to you like, well, gee, you're the only one who can't get a job. All of us is getting rich. Or do they say, man, we all got this problem,
actually,
you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know the answer to that.
Well, I know, but my listeners don't. So let's tell me what the climate is there. What do people say?
Well, you know, it's just like everyone else has been saying. There just isn't really any jobs, you know?
Uh-huh. Even with all this rebuilding, there's just not enough. They're bringing in outside labor, right?
Well, you know, I've talked to other people, and that may be true. And of course, I'm sure it is. But I know people who have jobs and haven't been paid in 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that going on around a lot?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Yeah.
And yep. They just can't make the payroll, you know, because the economic development is leaving. You know, when you have more folks leaving the tax base, who's going to shop at the local store?
I can go anywhere and work for free.
Hey,
well, hey, I hear you.
I'm doing it down here.
I'm doing it too.
Myself.
I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, you know, but yes, of course, you're absolutely right. But working for free won't put food on the table. That's the problem with it. There's nothing wrong with working for free.
I guess they figure, what's a homeless man need with money?
Well, people don't care much about the homeless, I'm sorry to say, you know. Before I let you go, Greg, just to go back a bit, were you ever living in a house?
We lived in an apartment.
So you
were a renter
then. People are not born homeless. You used to be housed.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And were you and your wife ever employed?
Yes.
For a long time?
We've only been down here about probably almost 3 years. And
after the storm or before the storm?
After the storm.
Okay.
And we started work right away. I mean, literally within like a couple of weeks.
Okay, and then what happened?
Well, you know, one thing led to another. Her boss was crazy.
Okay.
You know, it was mostly just money issues.
So you had disputes. She had disputes in the workplace, and so did you. What was your situation with work?
What I was doing maintenance around the apartment complex. It didn't matter. They wanted me to work like 10 hours a day, and they'd give me like $40 a day. But if I worked 6 hours a day, I still got $40 a day. So it didn't matter. You know what I'm saying? It was like...
Well, let me ask Bryce about this, because this is not an unusual thing. When there's a lot of desperation, there's a lot of exploitation. Have you heard?
Yes. Yes, I have. It's, you know, it's one way or another. You just get a paycheck, right?
But I was getting paid by the day.
But you're our local expert here, Bryce. You've heard this kind of story before.
I have heard this kind of story before. It doesn't matter. I mean, there was a lot of just pay across the table, whatever it took, because there was a lot of FEMA money here at that time.
Right.
And everybody maxed out on, you know, they knew what FEMA was paying, so they would max out on that and just pay the workers whatever. But what happened after that?
Well, then...
Job ended?
Yeah, well, it didn't exactly end. We was having a problem with them, and they just kind of politely asked us to leave.
You mean you were standing up for your rights? Is that what you're saying? Or
not exactly. What happened is my wife needed an extra day off because she wasn't feeling well.
Yeah.
And they just wouldn't hear
her. Wouldn't accommodate it.
They just told her, they said, well, we'll just find someone else.
Well, you know, that used to be in the Depression a sign, you know, if you're not going to work Sunday, don't if you don't come in Sunday, don't come in Monday.
We'll just find somebody else.
And that was how it always was when there was that. I'll tell one other thing to the listeners out here, which, again, I find it shocking. You know, after everybody got ripped by this storm, there were people who came around saying, we're going to fix up your house, and they'd take your money, and then they'd split with it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm sure that happened
here,
too.
There were people who preyed on the desperation down here, and it's hard to believe, but that's the way it is.
It seems like that is disaster. Both disasters and war all make money, you know? It's a money-making thing. If you have a disaster, it's money. There's people that come out from the woodwork to come down to just prey on that desperation of the folks.
And you'll notice that Saint Hood doesn't seem to pay. You know what I mean? You know, nobody ever heard about the great fortune Saint Francis left. You know what I mean?
And a lot of folks here, you know, try to do the right thing and wait in line. They said somebody else needs the help really bad. You know, so we're just going to wait, you know, for all the folks receiving assistance. And when they did, it was the people that lied on the applications or defrauded the government and actually got a paycheck with all the rest of us, you know, that were left behind. I'm probably one of the last persons in line, and that's basically where I got left, locked out.
Well, Greg, I want to move on, but you got anything else you'd like to tell us? You're going to still keep trying for work? You're going to keep on keeping on, we hope, and you're going to make it, we hope.
Well, we'd like to try to at least make enough money to get out of here.
Where would you like to go?
North.
After really?
It warms up, yeah.
Because you kind of think that it's just not going to work out for you.
I truly don't, you know. Yeah. I think... about as soon as we can get out of here, we're probably just going up and go.
Well, we're going to wish you the very best with that, Greg, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, those numbers to call in again are 877-NOBODY8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. We have somebody by the name of Cool Breeze in Sarasota, Florida. Cool Breeze, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Well, thank you very much, and you're doing a great job. I work for WSLR Community Radio. We're also 100-watt listener-supported community radio station.
Good morning.
And I'm their investigative street reporter, one of them. We're all volunteers.
Uh-huh.
And it's cold down here. I'm outside. It's in the 40s. And
here, too. Here, too. It's 43.5 degrees here right now.
Our homeless are out in it because our social services are in grid. The Army allows 7 days. Then you have to pay $10. There's no work here. No one has money to pay $10, so they have to sleep out. And the city was hired about 6 years ago. He was one of Giuliani's understudies in New York City. It was Peter Abbott. And he has since then got the city commission to pass an ordinance making lodging outside illegal. So you're arrested, taken to jail for outside lodging. And there are signs all over town in every vacant lot saying don't trespass, et cetera. So it's social services here are in gridlock. There's really, it's only volunteer efforts from citizens here that are making a difference.
Cool Breeze, you're breaking up a little, but let me ask you, how much homelessness is there in Sarasota?
Well, there are 1,500 homeless children in Sarasota, the city of Sarasota. In Manatee County, there's 1,800 homeless children. Homeless age is 9 years old in this country.
I'm not sure I quite followed that. I couldn't go. You're saying the average age of the homeless is what?
The age in the United States of a homeless person is 9 years old.
Gee, I'm not sure that's not a statistic I've heard. Let me leave it at that. But Cool Breeze, I'm sorry our connection isn't a little better, but I want to thank you very much. And I, of course, want to thank your station, WSLR, for carrying this broadcast and for the good work you're doing.
Well, I'm outside on a cell phone, so it's probably the interference. We've got a lot of wind tonight.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much, and I hope you never have to do with WSLR what WQRZ had to do. I hope you never have to face a situation like that.
Thank you for
like
even
that.
Trying. It's all good. Just keep on trucking.
Thank you, Cool Breeze. On the line, we got Morgan has a message he wants to relay. Morgan, are you there?
Everybody, this is Morgan again.
Hi, Morgan. What's the message?
Well, what's going on is I'm on IM with Harmony, who's over in Norway. She's an expat who was homeless when she lived here. And she did try calling, but it was busy. And also, I wasn't sure if the number would work overseas. So I had the idea that I'd pass along the message. And basically, she... I'm trying to get it now. Hold on. I'm looking for it right now.
Why don't you, while you're giving that out, Bryce, why don't you give out the number for your station with the area code? Those calls will get through from abroad if anybody's listening.
That's true. It's area code 228-463-1035.
Give it again.
That's 228-463-1035.
Oh, what a great voice. See, the fact is those 800 numbers, I think they worked in Canada, but they won't work in Norway or someplace like
that.
So.
Problem is, I don't think she can afford the long distance. But anyway,
that may be as well. If there's any millionaires over in Norway want to call us, you can call us up.
Just donate money to the person calling.
Yeah.
Anyway, she says, first of all, Harmony is somebody who I've never met in person, but I've known for years from her activism online through the Homeless People's Network, and she was one of the people who originally reached out to me when I first got on, and she's been a good support person. Anyway, she says she just wanted to give the info that she left this country as a homeless person. What was a weird feeling was that looking from the airplane down on the last soil of one's country and knowing there was not one spot in it where I could legally be, and how I became homeless when I was working, but had an accident and an injury. And I'm scrolling down. Let's see.
Well, I'm afraid we're kind of running out of time for this because I got other people stacked up. So what is her message in general? Just that she doing better in Norway?
That's the gist of it, I believe. She just wanted to pass on what I just said, and she was twice homeless. And yeah, she is better situated over there.
All right.
She says thanks for the phone number.
Okay, well, listen, tell her thank you, And I got to move along, Morgan. We got people stacked up now, actually, at this hour of the night. So I want to thank you for the call and for passing that along from Harmony. Let's bring up here Mike Rhodes from Fresno, California. Michael is also, by the way, a board member of the Homelessness Marathon. So, of course, I got to kiss his butt, you know. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hey, hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on.
And listen, anybody doesn't know, as far as I'm concerned, just as Bryce here is a real hero in the radio world, Mike Rhodes is, I believe, the unheralded but the finest journalist in this country I know of on the homelessness beat.
I just want to thank Mike for allowing y'all to come over here. It's like wonderful. Thanks, though.
Okay, so Mike, what is going on out in Fresno tonight and these days in general?
Well, there's a lot going on here. I guess the most notable thing that's happened in the last week or so in Fresno is an incident that happened with a homeless man. His name is Glenn Beatty. He was asleep under a tree and approached by two police officers. And we don't know what happened in the first couple of minutes in that encounter. But after they started beating on him, there was somebody with a camera that caught this on videotape, and it shows these officers pushing him to the ground, putting his hands behind his back, and beating him in the face. One officer was holding his hands behind his back, and the other was beating him. And that image now has gone all over the country. Probably many of the listeners have seen that briefly, and that is the only thing that media called me and asked me, you know, what I thought about that. And, you know, my first reaction was, you know, I was only surprised in that somebody caught it on video, because I know homeless people here have been abused and been beaten by the police, and it hasn't been recorded. You know, I've seen the results of it by talking to people in the encampment. They're constantly harassed by the police and stopped constantly, ticketed for minor offenses so that they have records and they have to go to court. They don't clear, they don't pay fines for jaywalking. Then the next time they're picked up, they're vulnerable enough they could be put in jail. It's just constant harassment. But this thing with Glenn Beatty has really created a stir here, because people can see for themselves the way homeless people are treated. Nobody should be treated like this person was.
Man, that's pretty interesting, you know, because that's three hots in a cot. You get in trouble and get beat up by the cops just because you're homeless. I guess you're not homeless anymore, huh?
Well, he was beaten so bad that he was taken to the hospital.
Jeez.
And the officer complained that he had broken a finger beating him. And now he is in the Fresno County Jail. He disappeared for 10 days. We don't really know where he was for 10 days. But he reemerged a couple days ago in the Fresno County Jail, and he's being charged with assaulting an officer.
And are the officers being charged with anything?
You know, it's interesting, but nobody has really brought that up. I mean, there is an investigation, which the police chief here has said will be looking at all aspects of this, but nobody has specifically said that the officer is being investigated, although I certainly think that he should be.
Well, you know, we had the Oscar Grant case in Oakland where they took a guy off the subway and shot him to death.
Really?
And
it's crazy.
It is crazy, but, you know, it's important to remember that video did not change the behavior of people. It recorded the behavior of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that these things have been going on all along. And Fresno, California, to its shame, is really one of the more brutal places towards the homeless in the country. It's not the only bad thing that's ever happened there.
Right. And I've got to say, too, that there is a bright spot to this, in that what this has led to is the community clamoring for police accountability. The attack of it against this guy was so awful that people are demanding at least an independent police auditor, police review board, some method of police accountability. And there'll be a big meeting tomorrow evening to to discuss that at City Hall, where I expect hundreds of people to go.
Hang on a second, Mike, because I want to take a call, and we want to kind of keep moving, but please stay on the line.
Okay.
Those numbers to call in here are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And we have a guy who calls in, and he always embarrasses me, Ted from Victoria, British Columbia. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon. Ted, are you there? Did we lose Ted? Okay, I don't think we have Ted, actually, so I'm not going to be embarrassed. Ted always says these things that make me blush, you know. And engineering, do we have any callers on the line now, now that we've lost Ted, besides Mike, that is?
No.
No, we don't. Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry we lost you, Ted. Thank you anyway. And let's go back, Mike, to you. And those numbers, again, are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. Mike, we, of course, originated from Fresno 2 years ago. And at that time, the city was facing a lawsuit over its treatment of homeless people, throwing away their belongings and stuff. And it was settled for a record $2.3 million, four times or something the size of the previous record judgment for crimes against the homeless. How has that changed the community, if at all?
Well, that was an incredible victory for homeless people. And it what this case involved was that the city of Fresno had been bulldozing homeless encampments and immediately destroying people's property. We had a class action lawsuit, as you mentioned, and over 300 people participated in that. And with the money that was given by the city and by Caltrans, which is the California Transportation Department, many of those people have gotten apartments and are now off the street. They're now housed. So it's had that immediate effect on the community that there are a lot of people that are no longer homeless. Another effect has been that the city really seems to have gone through some reevaluation of its policies and realizes that what they were doing was not helping homeless people. As odd as it seems, many of the people in city government swore that this policy was humane and just, that they were just trying to clean up the street and encourage homeless people to move into a program where they would be helped. The effect of it, of course, was that people's IDs were taken, all their clothing, their tools, whatever possessions they had were lost in these raids. So since then, the city has gone through a reevaluation process, and I think it remains to be seen what will come of that. There's a new homelessness czar that they've hired for the city of Fresno.
And a new mayor, by the way, since this happened, right?
We do have a new mayor. And
the old one was a stinker, so, you know, enough said about that.
and both the homelessness czar and the new mayor are insistent that what they want to do is to give vouchers to homeless people to get them off the street. We're not talking about a week or a two-week voucher. It's a voucher for as long as you need housing. And what we're pushing for is good, decent housing, apartments, houses. You know, in fact, Jeremy, there are enough houses in Fresno that are vacant right now because of foreclosures that every homeless person that's on the street could live in housing.
Which is, by the way, a big difference between Fresno and the Gulf Coast,
right,
where we don't have the housing, right,
right,
Bryce?
That's right. And it seems to me that's kind of interesting that, you know, it's just like here. It's we're being ousted out of our properties that we used to own to become homeless and then forgotten about, so we get discouraged enough to leave the area so they don't have to deal with the problem.
Yeah, well, that unfortunately is an approach a lot of communities have taken.
I guess so.
To the quote-unquote traditional homeless, which is time to move on. We got Ted back on the line. Those numbers to call in are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. Ted, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon. Did we lose Ted again? How come? Ted, are you there? Okay, I guess Ted is not there. I don't know what happened. All right, well, okay. We don't have Ted. Mike, how realistic is this, though? I mean, are we really going to see... the line is messed up. I'm getting a message here that there's something wrong with the line. It's not something wrong with Ted. I never said there was anything wrong with you, Ted. In any case, In any case, realistically, Mike, is there going to be help for the homeless in Fresno?
Well, Jeremy, it's really a matter of political will at this point. The housing is there. There's just lots of abandoned buildings in the downtown area. Yeah, I don't know if people know, but Fresno has the highest concentration of poverty in the entire nation, according to the Brookings Institute.
Now, this does not mean you have the most poor people or the poorest, but it means is you have concentration, meaning you have like neighborhoods where just everybody's poor. It's just bad.
Yeah, you look at some of the neighborhoods, and you know, you swear you're in a third world country. The encampments here, since the lawsuit, since the city has stopped bulldozing them, have become much more established, where people are putting in foundations and framed walls, pitched roofs. They're little communities, and you have people that you might have 200 or 300 people in any one of these encampments and 100 tents and these more substantial dwellings.
I want to ask you about that in a minute, but we're going to try for the third time as a charm. Ted is back on the other line. They've shifted everything to another line. So, Ted, are you there this time? Oh, for crying out loud. We lost Ted again. Come on. Three strikes. Well, listen, Ted, keep trying. I mean, I'm not trying to discourage you. It ain't my fault. I'm not the engineer. And let me tell you, by the way, Ted, if I was the engineer, everybody would be worse off because I can't do it. I'm just the Ted Baxter of this operation. Mike, it's been a subject of discussion. In fact, I've been talking to people here about Fresno who know. And are the encampments being left alone at this point? Do you have kind of de facto safe zones for homeless people, or are they still under threat?
Well, it's a little bit of both. But the reality is that the city has not been forcing homeless people to move. Now, I've gone to other Central Valley communities like Madera and Merced, and they have policies that are just like very strict. You put up a tent there, they'll bust you, and you'll be gone. They don't allow encampments to develop. In Fresno, they have taken a hands-off approach now, and the result has been these very organic developments of communities where you'll have, you know, in one community, it's largely Mexican. You have a lot of immigrant workers here that are from Mexico, and they'll join together in one neighborhood. So you'll have people from Oaxaca in one part of the encampment, and then over here you'll have people from Michoacan. So people sort of cluster together with their friends and people from you know, their communities from Mexico. And it's quite an interesting development in what we've seen. Before, they would just be constantly forcing people to leave. There'd be no place for them to go to, mind you, but they would always be pushing them out of wherever they were so that they didn't develop into a larger encampment. But they have sort of kept hands off of that, but there's still a constant harassment. This beating incident with Glenn Beatty is a you know, example of sort of the framework with which the police operate in here. They're constantly citing them for minor offenses like jaywalking, or, you know, they stop them on the streets to run their names through their system to see if they're on parole or probation. They search them. It's just a constant harassment where people who are in the more wealthy or more affluent neighborhoods would never suffer under those kinds of conditions.
It kind of sounds like, you know, it's just these problems existed until, of course, you had to bring attention to it, or information was the key that enlightened everybody for them to actually do something about it. That's kind of a shame that they're not taking a proactive approach all over the country in every city about the problem, about what they do with if they ever have homeless. It's just like here, they never thought about that at all. They're just trying to eliminate the problem.
There's got to be
move it down the road.
Political solution to this, because clearly we have the housing and the room in abandoned buildings that could be converted for housing. So it's not a matter of not having the resources or the houses. It's sort of the political system that we're in that somehow doesn't put people without housing with people that have housing. In fact, the system is pushing people, more and more people, out of the housing all the time.
Let me just jump in here and say I apologize to a couple of people who have called. We're not able to take calls just at the moment. We've had a little glitch. So I'm just going to be forced to talk to the two of you,
which
is my pleasure. And, and we will let you know out there in Radio Land as soon as we can take calls again. But that's the way it is. Mike, am I correct that actually the encampments, when they finally decided, if I may say so, to put basic sanitary facilities and stuff in one of these encampments, it was when the homelessness marathon was in town?
You know, the homelessness marathon, this was 2 years ago when we broadcast from downtown Fresno. It had a profound effect on the community and on the political leaders in this community. And it forced them to do things and to, you know, reassess their policies, realizing that, you know, they had just defaulted into these barbaric policies of bulldozing encampments of poor people. They would have never done, you know, that's just a horrible thing to do to people.
Yeah, they just got caught, that's all.
Bryce, I wish I thought that the homelessness marathon was going to have an equal impact on the Gulf Coast, but I think your problems out here are a little bigger than what they had in Fresno.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, well, add an earthquake to Fresno and see what happens.
Well, I don't wish to.
But I'm just saying, you know, are they prepared for that too? Because it's not going to be just the rich or the poor. It's going to be everyone.
Yeah, it's just the problems here. I mean, you know, compared to what's out there, and Mike, I mean, you know, I'm very sympathetic to the people out in Fresno, but when you're talking about the powers that be here, you're talking about powers that be that dwarf the powers that be in Fresno. These policies here are set in Washington. These policies are set where the governor's seizing the money. We're not just dealing with some mayor.
That's true. That's true. And it should be proactive to see what they're going to do about just housing human beings, period. That's what it's all about. We're all human beings. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white, whatever color you are, whether you're rich or poor. We saw that after the storm. But it seems like as things progressed, you know, and folks and their... I guess a lot of folks recovered. They just said, well, we just want people like us around here anymore. And then the discrimination started, and it's just finding a way out to get rid of the problem.
Are you saying that, you know, I mean, well, this is a question a lot of people have had on their minds. I mean, how much is racism in Mississippi in the past, and how much has it come out in the aftermath of Katrina, or how much did it go away in the aftermath of Katrina?
Well, right after the storm, it went away because everybody was helping everybody because it's about survival of life. But after things started getting better, some people, you know, that were had some kind of buffer zone around them, you know, or they actually got help for the insurance companies or immediately helped after the storm, you know, they completely forgot about their neighbors that have slipped through the cracks and still waiting 3.5 years later. You're just getting into the system. That's where I'm at now.
Right. Okay. And so, do we know at this point, I mean, the history of this has not quite yet been written. We know things have gone wrong, but it may be a ways before we can look back and see what really happened here.
Right. Well, I'm just concerned about the next, you know, for a man-made disaster, a natural disaster, it doesn't make a difference. We have to figure out in the country, and there should be legislation up front or ready to be proactive about what we're going to do about these kind of problems if we have some kind of mass disaster. But see, on the small scale, during the day-to-day operations where it's happening in Fresno or where you have the homelessness problems in the past, apparently, they're not even taking any of the proactive reports just to take care of it in the non-emergency times. So what do?
Well, you know, we were on, we had an expert on a couple hours ago from who had been to Cuba,
right,
actually somebody,
right,
a New Orleanian, an American, but
you know, and
they are proactive there. They
right,
are.
And that reminds me, you know, after the storm, it was like a year and a half later, we had the visitors from an institute, research institute from Japan, that came to the EOC to study how the Emergency Operations Center had the first broadcast station involved with it to immediately tell the public exactly what's going on straight from the horse's mouth so everybody would be
right,
satisfied with that. Well, they sent me a letter and said, it was Christmas of 2007, sent me a letter and said, thank you for your time. We appreciate you coming, because they came twice, research scientists from Japan, from the Earthquake Institute over there, on one of the islands where the volcanoes are and stuff, and said that they were changed their country's emergency management for what they learned with a public radio station or radio station inside of an emergency operations center to be able to give that information directly to the
public.
And
that was you. You were the one who brought this idea the first time, really, in our history that a radio station.
And now it's
going to
change their country's emergency management.
You should be
policy.
Proud of yourself.
Well, it's very accomplished.
If we're going to be talking about what we can be proud of, let's be proud that we can take phone calls again.
Oh, we can.
Oh,
that's
so
wonderful.
We got Jackie in Tucson, Arizona. Let's grab Jackie while we can. Jackie, are you there?
Hey, Jackie.
I certainly am.
Oh, Jackie, it's so nice to hear your voice.
Oh, great.
What's on your mind tonight, Jackie?
Well, I just want to say that the people can't afford housing because they're not paid the full value of what they produce. It's a legalized theft. And that's about what I have to say.
Okay, well, you're talking about the fact that people profit off of other people's labor, meaning that there must be some more worth to it than just what they're getting paid.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for that, Jackie.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jackie.
Bye.
And, you know, without getting into too big a critique of capitalism or anything like that, the fact of the matter is there is no city in the country where the minimum wage is enough to get you housing.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the cause, the wages are just too low, basically. Mike, is that true in Fresno as well?
Yeah, you cannot live on minimum wage and get an apartment. You'd have to have two or three people in your family working
to do it. And that's even in a...
Or a roommate or something like that.
A roommate, yeah.
But that's in a depressed area. That's in a town with a lot of poverty, and you still can't make it on the minimum wage there. I mean, you're not talking about a place like the Gulf Coast where there's no cheap housing left because it got wiped out. There is cheap housing in Fresno, right?
Well, you know, it's getting a lot cheaper all the time, that's for sure. I mean,
right.
Houses that were selling for $200,000 a year ago are now selling for, you know, $50,000 or $60,000.
Wow.
Sounds like it'd be easy to create some national program and have funding from the government to be able to house these homeless people anyways in group homes or whatever else, huh? We're using these lower income or availability of getting to even buying houses.
Well, this will be one, shall we say, people's dividend of the foreclosure crisis is at least the housing prices will come down. And
yes.
Make it, if you got any money, you can maybe get one, you know?
Right. If you have a job that pays something, but, you know, there's just been an enormous amount of erosion in jobs. I mean, our unemployment rate is pretty typically over 10%, and it's probably more like 13-14% now, and that's the official rate.
Well, you know, it's kind of like Soylent Green. You know, the bad news is that people are dying, but the good news is now you can eat them, you know?
Thanks for that, Jeremy.
That's kind of what's going on. I mean, you know, we're finding the bright spots.
Right. I mean, that is kind of interesting. That could be a solution, you know? So it's just, you know, you got any other ideas, call us up.
Who says there's no solution to homelessness, right?
There is solutions. There's multiple of them.
We'll
that's why we're trying
to
get your ideas.
Just a giant meat grinder and we'll eat the homeless. I'm for it, man. I think we can stop doing this now. We know how the answer is, right? Well, listen, I gotta move on. So, Mike, I want to thank you very much for your report. And everybody can, you are the editor of the Community Alliance newspaper out there. Do you have a website for the Community Alliance, by the way?
Yeah, people can go to FresnoAlliance.com and check us out.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I want to thank you, Bryce.
Thank you.
If people want to listen to WQRZ online, how can they do it?
Oh, go to WQRZ.org, y'all. WQRZ.org, and all I can say is make sure you're prepared for any kind of disaster, no matter what it is.
And thank you, and it's a great station, and it's worth listening to, folks. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back in a few minutes and have more of the Homelessness Marathon. Thank you all for listening, and come on back.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with Community Radio WQRZ of Waveland, Mississippi. The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations or of the originating and affiliated radio stations. To order CDs of this broadcast or to contact the Homelessness Marathon, go to homelessnessmarathon.org.